Good morning. My name is Sharon, and I will be your conference operator today. At this time, I would like to welcome everyone to the Pason Systems Inc. First Quarter Results Conference Call. All lines have been placed on mute to prevent any background noise. After the speaker's remarks, there will be a question-and-answer session. If you would like to ask a question during this time, simply press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. If you would like to withdraw your question, press the pound key. The contents of today's call are protected by copyright and may not be reproduced without the prior written consent of Pason Systems Inc. Please note, the advisory is located at the end of the press release issued by Pason Systems yesterday, which described forward-looking information. Certain information about the company that is discussed on today's call may constitute forward-looking information. Additional information about Pason Systems, including the risk factors relevant to the company, can be found in its annual information form. Marcel Kessler, President and CEO, you may begin your conference.
Thank you. Good morning and welcome to Pason's First Quarter 2017 Conference Call. With me here in Calgary is John Faber, our Chief Financial Officer. I will start with the highlights of first quarter performance. John will dive into the details of our financial and operational performance, and I will close with our perspectives on the outlook for the industry and for Pason. We will then take any questions. What a difference a year makes. Since the beginning of the new year, growth in drilling activity in North American land has exceeded our expectations. As a result, after two very challenging years, Pason has returned to positive income territory. Income for the first quarter of 2017 was $7.2 million, or $0.08 per share, compared to a loss of $10.9 million in the previous year period. Adjusted EBITDA was $24.9 million, with an adjusted EBITDA margin of 42%. Free cash flow for the quarter was $28.7 million. The key drivers of improved financial performance were, one, higher drilling activity in Canada, as well as certain U.S. regions, especially the Permian. Two, increased U.S. market share year-over-year. And three, a significant reduction in operating costs and depreciation expenses. These improvements were partially offset by lower market share and heightened pricing pressure in Canada, a weakness in certain international markets, especially Argentina and Mexico, and negative exchange rate effects. At March 31st, 2017, our working capital position stood at $203 million, including cash at $163 million. There is no debt on our balance sheet. We are maintaining our quarterly dividend at 17 cents per share. I am now turning the call over to John Faber for a more detailed look at the financial and operational numbers.
Thank you, Marcel. Consolidated revenue of $59 million represented an increase of 29% from $45.8 million in the first quarter of 2016. Sequentially, revenue increased 21% from $48.8 million in the fourth quarter of 2016. Adjusted EBITDA of $24.9 million represented a 42% adjusted EBITDA margin in the first quarter. This compared to adjusted EBITDA of $8.8 million and a 19% adjusted EBITDA margin in the same period of 2016. Adjusted EBITDA increased by $9.7 million sequentially from the fourth quarter of 2016. Strong incremental EBITDA margins over the fourth quarter reflect the significant operating leverage embedded in the company's cost structure, as well as the disposition of the lower margin 3PS business at the end of the fourth quarter of 2016. Year-over-year incremental EBITDA margins also reflect the significant cost savings achieved within all areas of the business through restructuring efforts taken at the end of the first quarter of 2016. The company posted net income of $7.1 million in the first quarter. This compared to a $10.9 million net loss in the first quarter of 2016, when the company incurred restructuring charges of $10.9 million, and a net loss of $11.3 million in the fourth quarter of 2016, when the company incurred a $17.5 million non-cash impairment charge related to the write-off of goodwill on the disposition of the net operating assets of 3PS. Free cash flow in the first quarter of $28.5 million was $24.4 million higher than the first quarter of 2016 and included a $4.6 million tax refund related to prior year's tax returns, as well as the receipt of $7.1 million in cash from the sale of the net operating assets of 3PS and the payment of $4.8 million representing a portion of the purchase price of Verdazzo Analytics. Our U.S. business represented 51% of total revenue in the first quarter. First quarter revenue of $30 million was up 27% over the same period of 2016 and up 5% sequentially. The first quarter of 2017 represented the first quarter without revenue contribution from 3PS. Adjusted for the 3PS disposition, U.S. business unit revenue grew more than 10% sequentially from the fourth quarter of 2016. U.S. revenue growth was driven by increased industry activity, as well as year-over-year growth in both market share and revenue per EDR day. U.S. market share decreased sequentially owing to the mix of contractor and operator activity during the quarter, rather than any specific customer wins or losses. Significant cost reductions from restructuring efforts taken in 2016 and the fixed cost nature of many of our operating costs drove significant expansion of the U.S. business unit's operating margin. Operating profit of $10.8 million was up $9.1 million compared to the prior year period and up $2.1 million sequentially. Our second largest business unit, the Canadian business unit, contributed revenue of $24 million in the first quarter, up 52% from $15.8 million in the first quarter of 2016, and up 64% sequentially from the fourth quarter. Significant increases in industry activity drove revenue growth in the first quarter, while both market share and revenue per EDR day decreased year over year. Canadian market share increased slightly from the fourth quarter of 2016. Operating profit of $12.3 million in the first quarter was up from operating profit of $2.9 million in the same period a year ago, and up $6.1 million sequentially from the fourth quarter. Our final segment is the International Business Unit. International Business Unit revenue of $5.1 million in the first quarter was down 20% from the first quarter of 2016 and down 9% sequentially from the fourth quarter. The primary driver of the revenue decrease was a decrease in industry activity in Argentina, our largest contributor to international revenue. The International Business Unit was able to further reduce its costs in response to challenging industry conditions and saw its operating margins improve. An operating loss of $134,000 in the first quarter compared to a $1.2 million operating loss in the first quarter of 2016 and a $446,000 operating loss in the fourth quarter. Finally, I'll turn to capital expenditures and the balance sheet. Capital expenditures in the first quarter of $1.1 million were down 83% from the first quarter of 2016. We expect to spend up to $25 million on capital expenditures in 2017 as we continue to invest in providing an industry-leading hosting platform of computing power and communications infrastructure at the rig site for the deployment of software-based products and drilling algorithms. The announcement in the first quarter of the award of a global license from ExxonMobil to its drilling advisory system is further validation of the value of this hosting platform. At the end of the first quarter, we had positive working capital of $203 million, including a cash balance of $163 million. We continue to have no debt on our balance sheet, and we are maintaining our quarterly dividend at 17 cents per share. I'll turn the call back to Marcel for the outlook.
Thank you, John. The outlook for the remainder of 2017 is clearly more positive than what we experienced in 2016. Some analysts are even projecting that oil may rally to the mid-60s by the end of the year. This would likely lead to sustained growth in North American land drilling activity. However, inventories of crude oil and refined products continue to be at very high levels. For the optimistic oil price scenario to materialize, OPEC and its allies need to extend their production cuts that went into effect in January. A failure to extend that agreement at the next OPEC meeting at the end of May could send oil prices much lower. As a result, there continues to be a lot of uncertainty around E&P capital spending plans and therefore for drilling activity going forward. We are more optimistic about the outlook for the oil price for the medium to longer term. The rate of depletion of developed oil reserves in many non-OPEC countries is accelerating. Continued underinvestment in new supply increases the probability of a supply deficit and thus higher oil prices down the road. For Pason, our two main objectives for 2017 remain to fully participate in the industry's upturn while containing growth of the cost base, and to make progress to become a key enabler of drilling automation and big data strategies in the oil field. We are comfortable with our current cost structure. In many regions, we can absorb higher activity levels, and we are thus well positioned to maximize returns in the industry's continued growth. We do, however, expect some pressure on short-term incremental margins. The efforts required to meet both increasing industry activity levels and growth with some of our largest customers will drive increased repair and installation personnel expenses. We continue to invest approximately $30 million per year in R&D and IT. We are focusing our development efforts on products and services that directly improve the efficiency, effectiveness, and safety of drilling operations, as well as wellbore quality. Example of this includes our new EPVT adaptive alarms and digital trip sheets, our AC auto driller, the ABLE directional advisor, and the deployment of the advanced Exxon drilling advisory system that John mentioned. We are building on our acquisition of Verdazo Analytics to provide customers with a holistic platform to analyze drilling, completions, production, and operational data. The addition of an enhanced live rig view web service to our cloud-based offering benefits office users of Pason Data. Our very capable and flexible rig site IT and communications platform can host new Pason and third-party software. Capital expenditures will be relatively small going forward, with a larger portion of our current development efforts focused on software and analytics. We feel good about Pason's market position and the prospects, and are excited about the potential of our new products and services. We are the service provider of choice for many leading operators and drilling contractors, with Pason equipment installed on over 65% of all active land drilling rigs in the Western Hemisphere and a growing presence in the Middle East. And we will be now happy to take any questions.
At this time, I would like to remind everyone, in order to ask a question, press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. We'll pause for just a moment to compile the Q&A roster. Your first question comes from Greg Coleman from National Bank. Your line is open.
Hi, Marcel and John. Congratulations on the strong quarter.
Thanks, Greg.
Thank you, Greg. Good morning.
I have two questions for you, one on dividends and the second one on operating leverage. I'd like to start with a dividend question. What should we be looking at for signals regarding a return to dividend growth? The last time you grew it was in 2014, where financial results were materially above they were where they are today. But today we saw, or last night rather, we saw cash flow from operations, which is more than twice your quarterly your dividend payment. So there's obviously a cash flow buffer there, understanding, of course, you need to reinvest in the business. And I'm kind of throwing out a bunch of metrics here, but I'm wondering what should we be looking at from our side looking in into what the board is looking at for potentially when Pason would return to dividend growth?
So I think the key really is around our outlook for free cash flow generation, probably a year out. I think once we have a sufficient level of confidence that our free cash flow generation will outpace the cost of the dividend, you should expect the revenue growth to resume. Dividend growth to resume.
Got it. And if I can take that and tie it in, Marcel, with your earlier comments, do you think a one-year out outlook is more looking at where inventories are today or where depletion numbers are today?
Good question, Greg. I would say that the 1 year is more of a short to a short-term metric, so I think much hinges on what OPEC will do here in a few weeks and determine what oil prices will do, what drilling activity will be a year from now. I think that the accelerating depletion of reserves in non-OPEC countries is probably more of a medium-term thing. Hard to really put a timeline around it, but it's probably well beyond the one-year horizon.
Got it. Okay, thank you for that. And then the second one was on operating leverage. We saw a lot drop down to the EBITDA line in Q1 versus Q4. You know, I know there's a couple moving parts there. I think you guys sold a low margin division earlier in the quarter, so that probably inflates the incremental margin slightly. Historically, when we've heard you talk about your incremental margins, you've mentioned, I believe, somewhere between $50 and $100 million of incremental revenue that would come at a very high margin before you have to start adding those costs back in. Today, at Q1, we see about $60 million of revenue and, you know, $24 million of EBITDA. How close are we to hitting the upper end of that point where the incremental margins are well above your, you know, reported EBITDA margins? I guess I'm trying to get a feel from where your EBITDA margin could trend to as we come off the back of this cycle, understanding that costs have come down, but prices are also different. Just trying to get a feel for what those EBITDA margins could look like and how close you are to that high incremental contribution.
Yeah, sure. Thanks, Greg. You sort of referenced some earlier comments we'd made in previous conference calls. We talked about, as we were near the bottom on the revenue side, we talked about the next kind of 50 to 100 million revenue at north of 75% incremental EBITDA margins. Still feel comfortable that that's the right number. Now, the timing of various sort of costs coming back to the system, whether it's repairs, personnel costs, it's impossible to predict exactly when those costs come in, and so that on a quarter-to-quarter basis, you're going to see some fluctuation in those incremental EBITDA margins. But even once we push beyond that sort of revenue level, a lot of the costs of the business do remain fixed. And so it's going to be more a question of strategic decisions around further investment on some of the priorities, particularly around being a key enabler on the automation and analytics side, and whether we make some strategic choices to further invest there, which would have some margin pressure. But otherwise, it is very high incremental EBITDA margin business because we're a very high fixed cost structure.
So to put it a slightly different way, John, just with those changes, would we look at sort of the low 50 EBITDA margin that you generated in 2011 through 2014 as a ceiling? Or with the changes on the automation side, is that a ceiling that you could potentially push through even given the current pricing environment or anticipated pricing environment?
It's really hard to predict at this point on some of those new products that are really focused on the automation and analytics side, because we are in trials on a lot of them, and some of the commercial arrangements have yet to be established. So, you know, the final price point has yet to be established on some of those products. So while we do think they're significantly lower CapEx, obviously, because they're more software-based, and should also, by extension, be lower OpEx because we could troubleshoot more remotely, there's more of uncertainty around what the ultimate price point will be on the revenue side to really project what that incremental margin is on some of those automation analytics initiatives.
Fair enough. Okay, thanks. That's it for me.
Okay, thanks, Greg.
Once again, if you'd like to ask a question, press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. Your next question comes from John Morrison from CIBC Capital Markets. Your line is open.
Morning, all.
Morning, John.
Morning, John.
In terms of the U.S., were there any material customer wins or losses in the quarter, or is the shifting market share just a function of your customers accelerating at a different pace than their peers?
Yeah, that's exactly the point. It's the latter. We are not aware of any material losses due to competition.
Okay. You referenced some of the competitive pressures in Canada on both the pricing side and market share. Was the pressure in Q1 any different than Q4?
In Canada, no, actually, the pricing pressure is really not east in Canada. It's really stayed very stubborn.
Okay. As you look at what's going on with all of your customers, is there any reason to believe that you aren't going to be able to hold a similar-ish market share in the next coming quarters and years as what you are holding today? I guess the question is, are you losing incremental customers at the margin in the last 3 or 4 months at this point?
Well, the business has always, on the Canadian and the U.S. side, had some level of churn, so that fairly stable market share in both markets has always sort of masked and ongoing sort of churn of customers, and I think that that churn will always continue. So, but I don't think there's any reason to believe that there would be any significant shift in what the sort of aggregate outcome of, is of that that process.
Okay. In the U.S., how are you thinking about pricing products at this point, and would you prioritize economic returns and give up market share if you believed you could push pricing for the bulk of your customers as we get into a busier 17 and 18?
We don't believe that it will actually be necessary to give up market share, even if we do get some higher pricing. I think the outlook and the mood in the U.S. and the activity level are such that I think in the next couple of quarters we may be well be in a position to do selective price adjustments on the high-value products. And I think it's all going to come down on the new product side to the value that those products can add to our customers.
So that's more of keeping legacy pricing stable and just increasing anything that adds incremental value to your customers more so than just systemic 3 to 4% price creep or something like that.
I think that's a fair summary, yes.
Okay. John, on the incremental margin side, it was obviously very constructive in the quarter. If we think about the acceleration at the margin of what's going on in the Bakken and the Rockies, should we assume that fixed costs do accelerate in those regions? Is that, I'd have to assume that if your market share stays strong in those regions, you might have to hire incremental fixed costs. Is that fair? And would those be a drag to what you're experiencing across the board, or how should we think about that?
When we initially talked about the ability to sort of absorb increased activity, we talked about that being a little bit more within the basins of activity historically. Now, as you can appreciate, a lot of the activity of late has been a little bit more in the Permian, Stack and Scoop, that Texas, Oklahoma region. So we've been hiring in those areas already. Some of the other basins, we probably still have some capacity before we'd be hiring back, but there clearly would be a limit in all basins, at which point we would need to start bringing on some fixed costs again. But within some of those non-southern Texas regions, we probably have a little more capacity than we do in the south today.
Okay. And Marcel, when you referenced the higher R&M costs earlier on the call in the coming period, are those one-time R&M costs, or are you just referencing that you're going to need more field staff on a slightly more fixed basis just to keep up with the rapid acceleration we've seen in both Canada and the U.S.?
It is really both. I think on the staff side, it was primarily the hiring of additional staff to keep up with the growth in the Permian. And on the repair side, it's product dependent. Now, obviously, we have more than enough of most products, but given that we very much turned off our repair cycle through the downturn, there is an uptick in repair costs for certain products.
Okay. Can you share how many rigs you guys were active on in Saudi in the quarter?
It's about 20.
Okay. And were there any incremental customer wins outside of Saudi to speak of? In the Middle East, I'm thinking specifically?
There were a handful in Oman, the United Arab Emirates, but only a handful.
Okay. Appreciate the color. Good quarter, guys.
Thanks, John.
Once again, if you'd like to ask a question, press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. Your next question comes from Ian Gillies from GMP. Your line is open.
Morning, guys.
Morning, Ian.
Morning, Ian.
With, I guess, a quarter in the books or maybe a bit longer of some new competition in Canada, given what you've seen today, could you maybe elaborate on how your product offering may be different than your peer and why that may maybe enable you to capture back some market share in upcoming quarters?
So the Canadian competitive situation is largely unchanged for a few quarters now, or maybe for longer than that. The main competitor that we have in Canada, in both in terms of market share and in terms of competitive intensity, is the one competitor we faced around the world, this being almost a duopoly position around the world. So in terms of much of our R&D effort is really focused on trying to outcompete that large competitor. Then there are a couple of other competitors, one who has probably a refreshed product suite, and one who is largely captive to a specific rig fleet that we are competing against. I think the situations there are quite different. I think you're referring to the latter one, not entirely a new entrant, but one who came out with a refreshed product suite. Their product suite at the core product level is similar to ours, but they obviously do not have the breadth of our services.
Okay, thanks. That's helpful. And with respect to the comments around big data and Verdazzo as we head maybe into the latter part of 2017, 2018, and you alluded to earlier, I mean, how should we be thinking about expensed R&D and how that could potentially be accelerating given these initiatives?
I think the expensing of R&D has actually accelerated quite a bit over the last couple of years. We used to capitalize probably about a third, and that's been down to about 20%. I don't anticipate a significant change in this practice, certainly not based on the acquisition of Verdazzo.
Okay, that's helpful.
And so part of the bigger driver on increased expensing is that a number of the things we're doing on the R&D side, because we're starting to deploy more algorithms that we're partnering with some other folks, and so a lot of the sort of initial R piece of that, if you will, is sort of taken care of already, and it's very quick time to commercialization relative to some of the historical products, so you see things hit the income statement much quicker as a result.
Okay, that's helpful. Thank you both very much. Last one for me, there was obviously one large new customer. You're putting a fair bit of equipment on their rigs as they were reactivating. Are you able to provide an update on where you are with putting Payson equipment on those rigs and whether there's any, and whether that's, I guess, complete at this point or whether we should be thinking you're going to be adding any more?
So I don't think we have, we're not talking about penetration of specific customers. I don't think it would be appropriate. I think we have made significant progress here on the last 6 months. I don't think it's complete. I think there's still some way to go here over the next 6 to 12 months.
Okay, perfect. Thanks very much. I'll leave it there, guys.
Thanks, Ian.
Once again, if you'd like to ask a question, press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. Your next question comes from Elias Foscolos from Industrial Alliance. Your line is open.
Good morning.
Morning, Elias.
I've got one question related to Canadian EDR rental days. I think in the press release you made a comment to non-oil and gas related activity. I was wondering if you could quantify that or maybe confirm that it might be around 10% or so of your total days. And the other thing is this sort of a one-off or do you think it would continue a new market vertical?
No, so we don't quantify that. What I can tell you is that's long been a part of the business. That will continue to be a part of the business. It's clearly a less impactful piece in 2017 than it would have been in 2016 just because we've had a more robust environment for oil and gas drilling in 2017, but I would expect we'd continue to have contribution from that space.
Okay, that's it for me. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Elias.
Once again, if you'd like to ask a question, press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. We do not have any questions over the phone at this time. I will turn the call over to the presenters.
Thank you very much, and thanks, everyone, and have a nice day.
This concludes today's conference call. You may now disconnect.